Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Most of us know what it feels like to fall under the spell of food when one slice of pizza turns into half a pie or a handful of chips leads to an empty bag. But it's harder to understand why we can't seem to stop eating even when we know better. When we want so badly to say no, why do we continue to reach for food? Well, joining us today is Dr. David Kessler, the dynamic former FDA commissioner who reinvented the food label and tackled the tobacco industry, now reveals how the food industry has hijacked the brains of millions of Americans. The result? America's number one public health issue. Dr. Kessler cracks the code of overeating by explaining how our bodies and minds are changed when we consume foods that contain sugar, fat, and salt. Food manufacturers create products by manipulating these ingredients to stimulate our appetites, setting in motion a cycle of desire and consumption that ends with a nation of overeaters. David Kessler, MD, served as commissioner of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration under George Bush Sr. and Bill Clinton. He is a pediatrician and has been dean of medical schools at Yale and the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Kessler, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am beyond thrilled. I have a master's in public health and health education, so I just gobbled up your book, no pun intended. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And in your foreword to The End of Overeating, you write, "The End of Overeating explores a question that haunts the minds of many people. Why don't I behave as I would like to, as I know I should?" And Dr. Kessler, you did such an amazing job of answering that question. And in fact, you mentioned that a fellow physician said something to you that sort of really reinforced that. If you can tell us what he said.
This was, a colleague who read the book and struggled, like many of us, with his weight for years. Even as a physician, he didn't know why it was so hard. He didn't understand that struggle. And he looked at me he said very simply, "I'm an addict."
How did that make you feel?
My goal in writing The End of Overeating was to be able to explain to people in simple terms what they probably had a sense of all along. You know, if diet and exercise were the answer, we would all do it and we would all be thin. But there's something, you can use just enormous power. You can grit your teeth. You can do it. You can do it for a period of time. But over the long term, unless something very different happens, unless there's really a change, a critical perceptual shift, in essence, of how you look at foods, unless you really change the brain pathways, you're not going to be able to deal with this very powerful force. We fail to recognize how powerful a stimulus food really is. Let me see if I can just explain it here.
Oh, sure.
Based on past learning and past memory, so there's the past experience, right? Food, or more importantly, food cues take on a significance. What do I mean by a food cue? It could be the sight. It could be the smell. It could be the time of day. It could be your car. Getting in your car connect is a cue. Every time I land at San Francisco Airport, the plane itself hitting the runway is a cue. I start thinking about these dumplings at the airport, right? So that cue, based on past learning, there's a stimulus, plane, right? The car, the time of day, a sign, walking down the street, seeing food. That acts as a cue. It activates my brain. It creates thoughts of wanting. It creates this action tendency, this arousal, this emotion. And what do I do? My mind becomes focused. There's this preoccupation. Everything else sort of leaves my mind except obtaining that food. I eat the food. There's that momentary pleasure. There's that real enjoyment. Nothing else seems to matter at the moment that I'm eating for that few seconds. And then, I get cued again, right, the next time. And every time I do that, I strengthen this cycle. So we end up in this cycle of cue, arousal, activation, attention, preoccupation, reward. And I keep on gaining the cycle. And the question is, where is there any real satisfaction? I'm just chasing it. It's ephemeral.
Yeah, it's true. And what's so interesting and important about your book is that you see how the food industry has such a huge hand in this. You have that already going, but then they're doing the layering of the sugar and the fat and the salt. And that is going to set off the neurons, which wants your brain to get you to keep eating more foods.
So why do these cues become so salient? Why are they so powerful? The fact is, fat and sugar, fat and salt, fat, sugar, and salt can stimulate us. Mm-hmm. I thought I was eating for satisfaction. I thought I was eating to fill myself up. I didn't realize that what fat and sugar, fat and salt, fat, sugar, and salt do is stimulate us to eat more and more. And what did the food industry do? They took fat, sugar, and salt, put it on every corner, made it available 24/7, made it socially acceptable to eat anytime. They made food into entertainment.
Yes.
They added the emotional gloss of advertising. You'll love it. You'll want it. You'll do it with your friends. We made it so that we're living in a food carnival. What did we expect to happen?
Yes. Yeah. And the journalist, Andrew, that you interviewed, he actually talked about the food carnival. And he also says that, quote, very little holds my attention the way a pizza holds my attention. I'm telling you, food talks, all food talks. And I thought that was so powerful and so true. And I also like the story about how you go and buy those two chocolate chip cookies, and even though you put them to the side and you do other things, you can't stop thinking about them. The same thing happens with me, and I'm sure a lot of listeners. It's really tough. It is talking to me. Come eat me.
And what's your favorite food?
My favorite food is probably corn chips and salsa and guacamole.
And what are they? When you look
the
at the
fat, fat on fat.
No, it's not just fat. It's fat and salt.
Oh, salt. You're right. Forgot the salt.
I forgot the salt. Fat and salt. And you know, well, about 20, 30 years ago, if you looked, mm-hmm. we chewed on the average maybe 20, 30 times a bite. What's that corn chip? Right. I mean, if you took that corn chip, how many bites would it take?
Not many.
Right.
Three.
I mean, so it would go down in a whoosh. Right? I mean,
yeah.
If it's one bite,
yeah,
it melts,
true.
I mean, it goes down in a whoosh, you get stimulated,
mm-hmm.
your orosensory cavity, your mouth gets stimulated, you know, it goes down, and what do you do before you're even finished?
You grab another.
You reach for another one.
Yes.
Right? So food is so highly processed,
mm-hmm.
and it goes down in a whoosh. So it's not just the fat, sugar, and salt, but it's also the fact that in the processing of the food, there's nothing that slows down eating. I mean, there's no fiber, there's no structure of the food. So it goes down in the wash. So the combination of fat, sugar, and salt and the high degree of processing, you know, back in the 1930s, 1940s, in order to feed a hungry nation, the food industry learned to process food. There are a lot of advantages. Shelf life, you could ship it over long distance. Food became more economical. But over the time, by making food so highly processed, loading in, dialing in fat, sugar, and salt, and then making these portions bigger and bigger. The problem is that much of what we're eating isn't really food.
No, it's not. And it's funny, and I don't mean to sound snobby, but I eat a whole foods diet. I was at a food court the other day, which is very rare. I had to go to the mall to get something for my computer. And I felt like I was in this alternate universe where I looked around at everything, and everything was all I could see was, you know, the words in your book, fat on fat, on sugar, on salt, on sugar. And I was like bombarded. I was like, I've got to get out of here. It's like crazy processed food world. And everyone was just sitting around, just like eating it like it was just fine. That's just what people eat. And I don't know, I was overwhelmed by it.
I have this cartoon in my head of the food court at the mall. Instead of the names, you know, mm-hmm. the place for the fries and the burgers and the Chinese food,
yeah.
One place changed the signs, you know, one place is fat and sugar, one place is fat and salt, yeah, the other place is fat, sugar, and salt. You know, we kid ourselves, but for the person who struggles with this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the real question, they say, is, all right, how do I get a handle on this? Because I don't like myself. I remember, you know, the book started because I was, you know, I mean, actually it started with two questions. First question is, if you want to stay alive, what can you do? Right? And that was really the first question, because you know, 3/4 of us are going to die from cancer, cardiovascular disease, or stroke. So what do you do in order to stay alive? And what happened was that the librarian intervention, I noticed as she was pulling the journal, scientific and medical journal, she lost 30 pounds. So, you know, so much of our health goes back, weights at its core. But then what do you do about it? And then one night I was, you know, surfing the channels, and there was, I was watching Oprah, and there was a scene with Dr. Phil on it. Don't get me started, Dr. Phil. And what was fascinating was there was this woman, well-educated, sophisticated, well-spoken, and she said, and I still remember this day, she said, in essence, after my husband goes off to work in the morning. I eat before he comes home at night. I eat when I'm hungry. I eat when I'm happy. I eat when I'm sad. I eat when I'm hungry. I eat when I'm not hungry. And then she said, I don't like myself. So why was this woman, who was so sophisticated, so well-educated, doing what she didn't want to be doing? And once you understand, and I can show you on the neural scans, right, how, and this isn't just, you know, a few people, but for many people, millions of people, from 70 million people, right, their brains have become, in essence, sensitized to this highly palatable food. So if you give them the food cue, the emotional core of their brain will become activated, and it will stay activated until all the food is gone. So what's very important is to explain to people what's going on, how their brain is being hijacked, because just because your brain is being hijacked doesn't mean you can't take responsibility and bring your eating under control. It's very hard, but we have to give people the tools and give people the tools in essence because of, you know, in light of the science we understand. Because once in essence, you know, your brain has become hijacked and your brain has become sensitized to those cues. And the bad news is, you know, down deep, you're always sensitive to those cues. But what you can do, you can't get rid of that old learning, but you can add new learning on top of that old learning. But you have to want it. It can't be something of deprivation. It can't be something that somebody else tells you, right, to do. I mean, it has to come from inside, and it has to be something you care about. And, you know, if you look at that huge plate of fries or those chips and say, that's my friend, I want that, that's the only way I'm going to feel better, then there's nothing I can do that stands in the way between you and those chips. If, however, you can change how you perceive those chips, and you look at those chips and say, that's just fat and salt, that's not going to satiate me, that's all going to make me eat more and more. I mean, it's that, you know, I mean, it's looking at what you're eating and deciding what you really want. But just as eating is a very emotional experience, changing your eating has to be an emotional experience.
It's funny because, like I mentioned, I used to go to the Mexican restaurants and I would just eat so many chips that I would take my meal home and I would feel so sick. It was only recently I've said to myself, now, you know what, I'm just going to tell them not even to bring them. So I made the decision and it became part of my rules that I have certain rules, like I'm not going to have cookies in the house because I know I can't eat just one, or I'm not going to have cake, or I'm not going to have this, or I'm not going to eat these chips. And I was really happy to read that that's part of the program. You know, there you talk about the cognitive part and behavioral therapies.
If the cues are not there,
yes,
your brain doesn't get activated. But the problem is you can, and you should, it's relatively easy, you change your environment.
Yes.
Certainly in your house. The problem is then you turn on the TV or you go outside and you walk down the street and you can't go more than 10 feet without being attacked by some food cue, and that food cue, you know, activates your brain. So it's not easy.
Oh, no, it's not easy at all.
To change your environment. So certainly changing your environment, eating with some structure.
Yes.
I mean, it's so key, because, you know, if you know when you're going to eat and, you know, what you're going to eat, it just and that's what you want to eat, right? Then all the food cues, right? You know, you basically you're changing your environment by some structure, right? And that's a good way. But in the end, What really makes the difference is deciding for yourself what you really want. Do you really want those chips? I mean, or do you want to eat something that's going to sustain you, that's going to nourish you and not make you feel? And so how you perceive that, those chips, If you just look at them, that's just highly processed, right? I mean, there's no nutrition. If you can change how you look at food, then you have the greatest chance of cooling down the stimulus.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and something I thought was so important is, you know, I don't eat at a lot of chain restaurants like Chili's, but I would have thought, like, say I'm traveling and I need to stop somewhere to eat. I would have thought ordering the margarita glazed chicken would at least be a better choice. I was so shocked to read that they inject it with all kinds of junk and modified food starch, and it's so highly processed. And that's the thing, like, things that you wouldn't even think were processed are more processed. I mean, I was just really stunned.
I think over the last several decades, that is, in fact, what is happening. You know, I went to one of my local restaurants, and I said to the chef, what's the most important question I can ask when I walk into a restaurant? And it was fascinating. He looked at me, and he said, ask where the food is from.
Oh, okay.
Because most of the food in restaurants, I mean, first of all, it's just assembled. I mean, they're not even chefs. I mean, certainly they work hard.
Yes.
But, you know, the fact is, I never walked into a restaurant that had any idea where my food is coming from. But more importantly, the food today, certainly even in restaurants, it's not just in packaged foods. Some of it is so highly processed and injected with things that, you know, make it real question whether it's real food.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, too. Like, obviously, the Southwestern egg roll at Chili's, like, I wouldn't go ahead and think that was healthy. When I read the ingredients, okay, smoked chicken, black beans, corn, jalapeno, jack cheese, red peppers, and spinach, I would have thought, well, the cheese is bad, and it's bad that it's deep fried. But if I was someone who ate fried food, I'd say, well, at least I'm getting chicken and black beans, and that's healthy, right? Or corn or spinach. But it's just amazing what they did to it. And that's why your book, I mean, there's so many reasons to read your book.
They're, in essence, they're fat bombs.
Yeah,
right. I mean,
exactly.
or you look at the salad. So I'm at JFK Airport in New York, and behind the stand, New York now has calorie counts on menu labeling, and the salad had 1,500 calories.
Oh my gosh!
The burger only had 400. So you know, I mean, you look at the salad and you say that's good for me. But you know, it's green stuff, but the lettuce is just a delivery vehicle for the fat and the dressing, you know, and the chips and the cheese
and
the everything that's added to the salad.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have these impressions, right, that it's good for us. But when you look at the caloric content, and unless you know the caloric content, you really have no idea.
I admired the research you did. The science, I mean, you quoted so many different scientists, and there was something that Kent Berridge from University of Michigan, he coined the term incentive salience. That has to do with the cues and rewards?
Well, that's exactly right.
Okay.
I mean, incentives, you know, if you go back 20, 30 years, a number of psychologists used the term incentive motivation. Right? And an incentive, it's just something in your environment that's going to change how you feel. So they can be positive incentives, things that are going to make you feel better, or negative incentives that are going to make you feel worse. And salience is just important. So these cues in the environment take on a certain salience in your mind, and they're able to hijack your mind. We are all focused, we're wired to focus on the most salient stimuli in our environment. What do I mean by that? If a bear walked in to your studio right now, you would focus on the bear. If your dogs are barking, you're focusing on your dogs. For some of us, right, I mean, what's the most salient stimuli in our environment? For some, it could be alcohol. It could be tobacco. It could be illegal drugs. It could be sex. It could be gambling. But what's the most socially acceptable salient stimuli? It's food. And what's at the core of that food? It's fat, sugar, and salt.
It's tough. So many people just talking about, oh, it's just willpower. If they would just, you know, try to control themselves. And that's why your book, again, it needs to be read, because it's so much more than that. I mean, the science behind it.
Because if it was willpower is not going to work. It'll work for a short period of time. Sure, you can grit your teeth. But once your brain is activated, once you've been cued, once you have that arousal, you know, you have focused attention, and then if you just say, I'm going to just white knuckle it, right, and change it, sure, you can do that for a moment. But in fact, by using willpower, as we use that term, what do? You just only end up thinking about it more. And when you think about it more, I mean, that's the stuff of obsessions and cravings. So once your brain is activated and you're acute and you have this arousal and increased attention, this preoccupation, if you try to stop that action tendency, mm-hmm. I mean, you end up thinking about it more. And that only, again, that leads to obsessions and cravings. I mean, if you can distract yourself, right, if you can do something else, I mean, that works. But the best way is to try to cool down the stimulus so the stimulus doesn't have such power over you. But you can't just deprive yourself, because deprivation is not going to work. If you want it, I mean, that's the real way you end up being hooked. Yeah, you want it.
Yeah. And how do you manage that balance? If you make, like, I've made rules for myself, I'm not going to have this certain type of food or this type of food. But then there might be sometimes you feel like, oh, I just want to indulge, but then you don't want to kind of go over the tipping point.
Well, first of all, you know, rules are good.
Yes.
But they have to be your rules.
Yes.
They have to be rules that have an emotional core.
Okay.
Right? If they're just rules where you're depriving yourself, and that's not what you really want, it's not going to work. It'll work for a short period of time. If you pick up a diet book and you read someone else's rules, it's not going to work. So deciding what you really want to eat and being able, I mean, I look at huge portions of food and say, that's disgusting.
Yeah, me too.
Right? And I just say, that's not what I want. And I want food that tastes good, that I enjoy, food that I like, food that's going to fill me up, right? But food that's not going to keep me eating. And I almost resent food that is layered with just fat and sugar, fat and salt, fat, sugar and salt. I look at that food and say, that's just stimulating me. It's not satiating me, and it's not giving me nutrition. And it's a real shift. And I become almost angry at food. I mean, that is masquerading at food.
Yes.
I mean, and it's become a real emotional thing. For me. So again, the food rule, it's not about just rules. Rules are important because, you know, again, because they give you some structure. But they have to be the rules you want, the rules that have an emotional basis within you. You know, for some of us, you know, different things are going to matter. For some, it's going to be the ethical treatment of animals. Others are going to want to eat organic. Some people are going to want to eat natural. Some people are going to want to eat only certain foods, become vegetarians. Me, I just look at huge portions of fat, sugar, and salt and say, you know, I don't want it. I mean, pick an appetizer in a modern American restaurant. I mean, you know, pick buffalo wings. What are they? You take the fatty part of the chicken to start with, the wing. You load in 30-40% in the manufacturing plant just by frying it there. Usually it's fried again in the restaurant. That loads another 30-40% fat. The red sauce, what is it? It's fat and sugar. The white creamy sauce, fat, sugar, and salt. What do you end up eating? Fat on fat on fat on fat on sugar on salt.
Oh, my gosh.
And is that what you want to be eating? Sure, you look at it, and we've been conditioned to sense that it's going to taste good. Of course it's going to taste good. It's highly stimulating. Right?
Oh, yeah.
But in the end, the question is, how are you going to feel?
I think that's the big thing for me, the rules, is because when I eat processed food, I feel sick. I'm really sensitive. So for me, I call myself a whole fooditarian, which I'd like to coin that term at some point, because if it's a whole food, then I'm eating it. So I do eat animal products and organic, and I eat, you know, whole grains and stuff.
When you're talking about, you're eating real food.
Yes, that's basically it. I have an avocado and tomato for breakfast, or a yam. I mean, people think I'm a freak, but it fills me up. And then I'll have some lentil soup or some brown rice or a piece of, you know, organic chicken or a salad. It's all real food. I can't eat the other stuff. It makes me feel sick. So my rules came from, do I want to feel sick all the time or do I want to feel good? So for me, it was a little easier because I really did feel the effect quickly of processed food. But for someone who can eat it all day and they don't feel sick, then it's, I think it's, you know.
Well, you also learned another trick.
What's that?
I mean, and that is not only are you eating real foods, right? But my guess is your diet is pretty low in sugar.
The only sugar I eat is dark chocolate.
Right.
And that found in fruit.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the fact is, If I gave you, we did a scientific paper, not the usual title of a scientific journal. It's called Deconstructing the Vanilla Milkshake.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think in the vanilla milkshake drives you to come back for more and the real want? You think it's the sugar? You think it's the fat?
I think it's the flavor. I would think it was the fat.
Sugar is the main driver.
Really? Okay.
But when you add fat to it, it's synergistic.
Oh, okay.
It's additive. Mm. Right? But sugar is the main driver. And the fact is sugar, you know, it's highly stimulating. And so what you're eating whole foods. Right? You reduce the amount of sugar, I mean, in your food. And you're not afraid to eat good fats.
Oh, I love good fats. Nuts,
right?
Olive oil. Oh, yeah.
And that will satiate
it. It does.
Right? And because if you're not satiated, if you're hungry all the time, that's not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's why all the fat-free cookies were such a bust, because people would eat so many of them.
The snack wells.
Yeah, you wrote about that.
They were the worst thing, because I would start the box, I would eat one, and then I would find myself walking back to the box without my brain even engaged. My hand would go in the box. And they were just so high, in sugar. That it just substituted for the fat. Food has to satiate. It has to be enjoyable. It has to be pleasurable. But the best guide is if you can get to look at food and as you said, you know, the real food. And my sense is, my hope is, that over the next decade or two, that they really become a food movement in this country, a movement back toward real food. Foods that have the ability to not only give pleasure, but to fill us up.
Yeah, I hope so. I really, really do. Well, you are so fascinating and wonderful, Dr. Kessler. I could talk to you all day long, so I want to thank you so much. I encourage everyone, get The End of Overeating, Taking Control of the Insatiable American Appetite. I read hundreds of books, and honestly, this is like nothing I've ever read. It really is fantastic. And do you have a website, information people can check you out?
TheEndOfOvereatingBook.com.
Terrific. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthnetwork.com. I hope everyone has a great day. Get some whole foods in there. They're going to make you feel good.
And there's a Facebook page.
Oh, great.
And we're on Twitter.
Oh, cool. All right. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Dr. Kessler. Everyone have a great week. Take care. Bye-bye.